Turuntuset tulee Joonael.
And our main topic today will be about how to increase sales in store. To introduce the topic, I would like to say that shopper marketing is a trending topic. Everyone is discussing about how to design a customer journey, how to cross-promote different products, how to use more subtle ways for influencing sales, like music or smell or anything, and also a lot of things are happening in store in the digital world. So, Danieli, my first question is that what do you think? What are the most recent trends in shopper marketing? What you see?
Yeah. Maybe I should give you a little bit background on you know why I'm speaking about shopper marketing here. On top of my role in TBWA, I run Integer Nordic, which is a part of Integer Group owned by TBWA, and we specialize on shopper and retail marketing, and we're actually one of the biggest shopper and retail marketing agencies in the world.
So you really know what is happening.
Yeah, so I hope I can give you a little bit of background. In terms of recent trends in shopper marketing, I think designing across a customer journey is of course important. Actually, it's something that has been neglected for a long time. I think somebody in the 40s or even before that said that you know, was running a store that you know, I'm the worst salesman there is, and therefore I need to make buying as easy as possible. But if you look at the stores nowadays, especially if you look at bricks and mortar, I think it has come down to optimization of the store. You know, how much sales per square meter you can get generate from the store, and actually the fact that you know, people actually enjoy things. People actually enjoy shopping. People actually enjoy to be served, and you know, have their lives made easy, has been somewhat neglected at the store. So I would say we're living in a time that you know raises the meaning of experience again, the experience that you generate. At the moment, I think because of the rise of the e-commerce, a lot of people people are still buying from the stores, but they're finding that the shopper journey that they go through when they are online is actually a lot easier for them to manage than the one that they do in stores. So think about it. If you're looking at something in the online environment, there's Google, which makes finding things easy. You can compare easily. You can make sure that you're not screwed over with pricing and so on. I mean, you can basically with a little bit of effort, and you can actually narrow down your searches quite well, and you know, actually get your friends or people from the other side of the world, you know, helping you in choosing the right things. But when you go into a bricks and mortar store, you're hardly told which category should be looking at, and things are pretty hard in bricks and mortar nowadays. I don't know if, at least in Finland and in the Nordic countries, there's fewer and fewer people to help you in the stores and so on. So I would say it's the rise of experience that we're going to see in the future. And to give you some examples, I think on the subtle ways of influencing sales, I think I just came back from from the States, and you know, I think a nice example would be I was in New York in Macy's, and it's a huge department store, as you probably know, and I was looking for some gifts for my family when I was there, and you know, I was somewhere in the ladies department, going back and forth trying to find something that I was supposed to get, and I think it was the third time that I went through the same corridor, and I suddenly got this beep from my beep on my mobile. Okay, I had downloaded the Macy's app, and it said that, you know, are you lost? that we actually have a sale on men's department that you know, check out. And I call that service. I mean, that's you know, even though I was looking for something in that department, then I mean, that service. And that's we're going to see a lot more things like that in the near future in the bricks and mortar as well.
Very good.
Provided by brands, provided by the retailers.
It just reminded me that that last week or during previous week we did some tests here in the hypermarkets in Estonia, mm-hmm. Trying to how long it takes to find some products in the categories that people are not very familiar with, mm. and what type of emotions does it awake, and of course it was kind of a variety of emotions, but mostly people told that if you don't find a product during a couple of minutes, you feel completely lost, you feel frustrated, and you think that you will never would like come back to the store. So it was a kind of very good and really emotional people explaining how they tried to find, where did they look, and it was really kind of really difficult with some categories to find things. They would have wished to have an app telling them that turn right or turn left.
Exactly. I think the basic principles of you know, guiding the shopper in the stores. I mean, navigation, of course. I mean, that should be quite easy, that, you know, where to go. education about the products. I mean, online you would have, you know, a lot of explanation on you know, how to use the product and actually who has used it and, you know, what did they like about it. And inspiration. I think the focus in bricks and mortar has been too much on the navigation part, and I think the inspiration and education parts have been neglected heavily.
Daniel, do you mean that if the bricks and mortar store gets the emotional and inspirational part right, so they can also continue competing with the e-stores, or is it kind of a lost battle as we see it currently?
I think the rise of the bricks and mortar the bricks and mortar are coming back up. I think what happened is that we all thought a couple of years ago or two or three years ago that okay, the online store you know, as a separate unit will come and kill the bricks and mortar, but I think right now we're seeing that or the prediction is I think by McKinsey or somebody is that by 2016, which is, you know, just a couple of years ago, years from now is they're expecting that 64% of all commerce will be web influenced, but, you know, commerce that happens in store. And actually that part of the commerce the transactions that actually happen is the, you know, the biggest growth area. I mean, it's something like, I can't remember the figures right exactly, but let's say that right now it's about 20%. And by, you know,
couple of years it will be
years. Yeah,
three times more.
Yeah, And at the same time, of course, the online commerce grows as well, but the growth is not as dramatic. Of course, it varies by the category. If you think about, for example, let's say consumer electronics, I'm sure that the number is already quite near to the 64%. From all, especially if you look at, the more expensive items. But I'm not so sure that the online commerce actually will in the end. Of course, some players will die, some players will survive, and that's the name of the game. But those who are doing their stuff well, I think, will survive and actually benefit from the online sales. So I don't think the online store is a separate thing. I think it's a total experience of that you have to sort of figure out your online presence so that it supports the offline presence.
I just wonder how can a store do it in the best way, because there is a lot of talking about multi-channeling and omni-channeling, but it seems that everyone is just trying to figure it out currently how to do it. Do you have any bright example about someone who has really nailed it and you can say that it works?
I'm sure that there are plenty of good examples, but as you said, I mean, everybody's just trying to figure it out. And I know from our perspective, I mean, we're doing a lot of work on with brands and with retailers, trying to understand what makes the people tick. I think it comes down to understanding the customer or the shopper in a whole new way, and trying to figure out what are the right ways of influencing him or her in the path of purchase? What are the hurdles that he or she might take, and so on? In terms of good examples, I think in good and bad, if you look at, for example, the U.S. market. I know that there is a lot of bad things to be said about, Best Buy as well. But Best Buy, I think, has, to a certain extent, made the online service really, really something that supports the offline. Of course, at the same time, they're losing business from the offline, but that's due to more to let's say Amazon and the online competition, but I think they have found something very good in their way of approaching things. Coming nearer, it's not a perfect example, but a couple of years ago we started to work with one of the online. Or one of the consumer electronics stores here, and maybe I can check afterwards if I can mention their name here. But
okay, but then don't mention. You can just tell the story, and what we can learn from it.
Yeah, but when we started to work with them, 2 or 3 years ago, their online store was selling like 100,000 euros per year.
Wow. Okay.
which is nothing. And the retailer, their sales, through the channel was something like almost 200 million euros. So consumer electronics. And once we started to work with them, we designed their online store and more importantly, I think we provided them with some insights on actually, how what do the the people that shop in their stores actually appreciate, and you know what type of services are they looking for, and we found out that actually the service promises that they had, you know, were only serving the offline environment, and you know, when people came to the bricks and mortar store, they didn't, you know, find the same sort of values that they had seen in the competition and in their own web store.
For example, what did they not find there?
Simple things, actually. It comes down to very simple things like you know, how do you describe your delivery service or your 24/7 phone services or your well, they're not allowed to say price guarantee, but things like you know, how to make sure that the price you're seeing in the you know, offline environment actually is a pretty good price. So we kind of redesigned them to serve the shopper who was used to, you know, comparing these things against different online stores.
I have another question also. You were talking when we started today that about this inspiring part in the shops. So what is this inspiring part about? What should the shops do to inspire me as a customer?
It's not just shops. I mean, it's also brands. I think brands need to. I mean, you know, the products that are sold through the stores. I think both brands and retailers need to start looking at, you know, more closely, not only to the, you know, the point of purchase in store that normally gets all the attention, but how can you actually make the life of the shopper easier while he or she is, you know, living her life, basically, because there's no omni-channel for a shopper or a consumer. That's a term that retailers and, you know, us service providers have you know, come up with. It's not a term. It's not a shopper term. It's not a consumer term. I mean, the life of the consumer is, you know, how can I make this easy for me? And you know, consumers are living and looking and buying.
So, do you have any good example of this? Some shop inspiring well enough.
I think there are a number of good examples. I mean, big and small. I think a lot of the. It could be a great example here. I think one of the great examples that we've done is experimenting with shop windows, for example, that you can actually, while the stores are closed, you can actually purchase stuff or, you know, send, you know, shopping lists to your mom from the window. We've done that with a number of brands now. So digitizing the shop windows, for example, to you know, first of all, to interact with the bypassers and you know, engage them to come into the store, but also to actually leverage the or you know, make use of the expensive retail space that they are using. If you think about it, the window is a very, very old and conventional space that you know, retailers pay good money for. I think another good example is that, which is, it's not a very recent one actually, but I think this makes the point very well. My Integer Group works a lot with cosmetics and things like that, and you know, there was a case on hair color a couple of years ago, where 2 or 3 years ago, I think, where just, you know, by looking at the aisle where the shoppers were buying hair color, they found out that, you know, people actually had a really hard time finding the right shade and right, you know, color for their hair. And it was mainly due, and this was in Walmart, by the way, and mainly due to the fact that you know, the category wasn't organized by color, it was organized by brand. And so you'd have to go back and forth between brands to find your right color. Second of all, there was no real help. I mean, you would have all these beautiful people on the packaging, but not really any help to you know, for example, to see, you know, does this color that is on the package actually match my hair and so on. So what was designed to help the customer, I mean, and yes, the customers spend as much as 15 minutes on the aisle and often left without buying anything because they were unsure of themselves. So what was designed, it was actually a kiosk that with three questions provided you with five choices of hair color that you would and actually with a mirror as well that you could actually, because they were finding out that a lot of the women were pulling their hair to, you know, see the match the color of the package, so no need to do that anymore. So simple things, kiosk that actually provided the women five options of hair color that would, you know, match their needs after three questions asked to, you know, simple questions that were asked to make sure that you know, we actually listen to the shopper.
So
of course, if I may add, then of course there's a number of different apps. I mean, you're shopping already when you're designing or thinking about for example your meals for the weekend. I mean, you're already shopping. There's a lot of good apps for you know, creating shopping lists and you know, getting inspiration for cooking and so on.
And I just want to come back to the hair dye. Does it mean that in addition to inspire the people, you also increase the conversion rate? So it means that more people were finding actually the color they wanted and they were buying more. Was it, or I don't know if you know the details, was the amount of purchasing increasing or was the average purchase increasing?
The amount of purchases.
Okay.
And the average purchase. I mean
the average, because they bought an more expensive item because you provided it as a first solution, or they bought two?
Well, if you think about it, if count it from the number of people actually buying, because a lot of people left without buying.
Okay. Okay.
The solution. I'm not saying that you know, that you would actually at the same, or we don't have the numbers if the people were coming back to buy more, but basically a lot more people bought.
Very good.
And therefore we got the volumes up.
Very good. So My next question is that, or not even a question, but a comment, that what we see here in Estonia, somehow there is understanding that the brands do not need to worry about what happens in store, because the store owners should do it. They should sell the products, and the brands, they are just delivering the product to the store, and that's it. And then I see in my trainings very many companies really being surprised that should we really do something in order to get the products moving? Is this really our role? So Are we somehow different from the other world here in Estonia, or is it something that really the brands are just now learning how to work better in the retail environment?
Totally different. No, no. I think we did a number of interviews with retailers early last year, you know, with their purchasing, and then, you know, tried to find out what is it that they're looking for from the brands at the moment, and what they are really looking for is not just, you know, short-term promotions that of course the brands need to come up with in their plans for, you know, actually getting the stuff into the store. And I'm surprised if the brands are not, you know, providing retailers with ideas on you know how to increase the sales, because if not, it's a short term strategy. So you're gonna fall out of the shelf quite soon if you're not doing that. But what we found out is that you know, instead of, you know, short term promotions, they are looking for longer term strategic partnerships, and, you know, how to in a longer term make sure that the category grows. And second of all, I think you should not only be looking at category. You should look at how to maybe cross promote over categories, and therefore I think a lot of brands need to start looking around themselves, and you know, have a, you know, if you're selling beef, you might, you know, want a partnership with the sauce provider. So true. To say that you know, what are there, or if you're selling beer, you might want a partnership with ice hockey, maybe. At least here in Finland, we're big on ice hockey. So you might want to, you know, make. Let me put it this way: in the more developed markets than you know, the Nordics and the Baltics are, I think it's very common that brands come up with you know, a total campaign idea, not just for the brand that you're trying to sell into the, you know, the retailer, but actually a total campaign idea that the retailer then conducts with several different brands. I have an example. American football game day promotion that you see in different forms in different retailers in the US market is actually something that's, you know, a brand has come up with. And different retailers under a different sort of a campaign name carry it through with, let's say, 5 to 10 different brands. So basically brands buy into the promotion that another another brand has come up with, and the retail conducts. Understand what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's, through that kind of ideas, you create value to the retailer, and you know, if you bring value to the retailer, you're not likely to, you know, be the fifth or sixth brand that doesn't get the shelf space anymore.
So if you are a brand owner, your task is not to increase only your own sales in the store, but to increase the category, and even to help to promote the different categories at the same time.
I think the retailer should not care less about a single brand's growth if it cannibalizes the other brands in the category. the retailer should be looking at, you know, how does this thing that I'm doing with this brand actually grow this category or grow categories around it.
Yeah.
So that's what the brand should be looking at.
Very good. My final question here is that just a bit short example that currently we have agreed that in every marketing radio talk show we talk about one category. For the first 50 or 68 shows we talked about wooden houses that Estonia is so good at in exporting, and now we decided that because of the crisis of food industry in Europe and all the import restrictions and all these things, we decided to turn to food companies. And my last question is that how should a company that produces food, let's say it's a dairy or I don't know, a bakery, how should they use the knowledge of shopping marketing in order to launch a new product? Or even not a new product, but let's say maybe it's a new category. What should they do to launch it in the smartest way?
It always comes down to the insight on the shopper and the consumer. I think first of all, you need to understand you know how the shopper shops. If we look at bakery products, for example, and I'm coming from a bit far, I think, to the actual question, which is actually really hard to.
That's why I'm asking. It's hard. That it should be also hard to answer.
So if you look at bakery products in a supermarket area, I think that's an example, or that's an area where people, you know, generally buy two or three brands and actually sort of indulgence buying or what do you call that? I'm losing the word now. What do you call that when you buy something as an ad hoc?
Impulse,
yes. Sorry. So a lot of stuff, a lot of the purchases are not, or let's put it this way, the bakery section doesn't really encourage people on impulse buying. And that's a bit of a problem, I think. And you know, in this area, it comes down to store design and especially the way that the section or the category is designed in a lot of stores. But in order to launch something for that category, I think all dairy products, I think I think it comes down to understanding, you know, what happens down in the category. So maybe you would want to for the bakery selection, maybe you would want to you know think about, you know, what role do we want to take in the shopper's life that it's not actually taken yet by the other brands, and you know how can we support the retailers. Retailers current.
Let's make an example that there is something a dairy and a bakery met, and then they decided to make a product that is, I don't know, a cake mixed with some yogurt or dairy or something, and then bringing into the market a new product that actually does not have a category yet. And it's probably difficult to put it into bakery area because it needs probably some cold, and then it's difficult to put into the dairy area because people are not looking this type of product there. So, and these type of innovations happen all the time, that people come up with creative ideas.
That is true. That is true. And if two companies come together with this idea, I think the most important thing is to decide who leads then, because or if it's a totally new brand, of course, it's there are all new difficulties in that. But it's good that brand innovations happen, and of course we as customers we don't always even know what could be done or what we actually desperately need at the moment, which is a good thing. World goes forward, but I think the most important thing still is to nail down what does the customer or shopper actually need this product for, and what purpose does it serve in his or her life. Does it make her better in something? Does it and through that comes the insight that actually convinces the retailer and actually gives you the space in the store if you can actually say that okay, this is the audience, this is how we're making their lives better with this product, and actually there's this and that or people are actually wanting this even though they don't know that it even exists yet. But I think that's the main point. I think I don't have a better answer.
Very
I think
good.
That it's not but I would encourage, and I know that it happens all the time, that brands need to look at different categories, and for example, a bakery could. I mean, if you think about bread, for example, how it's developed. I mean, they have ready-made flour and then all ingredients together in a big. Or this is how I imagine it. They have a big bag in some bakery that has all the flour ingredients in it, and so on. So on. If baking is a big thing, why not sell that ready-made flour ingredient to the consumer with it's not ready bread. But if baking is a
it would ready be a for trend. Baking,
yeah. If it would be a trend, why not sell that same stuff to the consumers with a higher margin?
Yeah, very good.
And then you actually get a bigger share of the bread moments at home, and actually a secondary placement in the store where your brand is present.